Good morning, everybody, and congratulations. You've made it to all the way to this point, and just a little bit way to go. This morning's session that we are here for is the Titan Cloud CSU Fullerton's Virtual Computing Infrastructure Implementation. Before I introduce the speakers, I please encourage everybody to go and fill out the evaluations. Now, they haven't told me where these evaluations are. They're on the web someplace. So please go out there and complete the evaluations for not only this session, but any other session that you've attended. It's the only way that we can incrementally improve the conference from year to year. And now on to the more important aspect of this, and that's our speakers for today. First, I'd like to introduce Romel Hidalgo. He is the Assistant Vice President for Information Technology and Senior Director of Infrastructure Services at California State University at Fullerton. He is responsible for ensuring the success of the data center, server infrastructure, telecommunications, and the network infrastructure teams at the CSF. He has been with the university since 1998, initially as a student assistant, then as an IT staff member, and now in his current role. He is also a member of the faculty at the CSUF College of Business and Economics, teaching information systems and decision sciences. He holds his MBA from the University of Guam and a Master of Science degree in Management Science Information Systems from CSU Fullerton. The next person I'd like to introduce is Chris Manriquez. Chris is the Associate Vice President for the Division of Information Technology, Chief Technology Officer, and Academic Technology Officer at Cal State Fullerton. In these roles, he oversees operational technology services and enterprise projects, both academic and administrative. Chris is also a faculty member in the College of Business and Economics, teaching information system and decision sciences. And in his 16 years at the campus, Chris's previous roles include that of Director of Desktop Computing in the Help Desk, the CMS PeopleSoft project, that must have been interesting, and interim CITO. He earned both his BA and MA in geography at Cal State Fullerton. And then finally, Willie Peng, who is the Assistant Director of Infrastructure Services at Cal State Fullerton. He is responsible for managing the day-to-day operations of the server infrastructure, telecommunications, and the network infrastructure teams at Cal State. He has been a part of the team since 1997. You must have started when you were about 12 or 13. And he is now in his current role as part of the campus management team. Willie is also an active participant in the Cal State system-wide network and security development and implementation teams, and is the former chair of the CSU-wide NTA, the Network Technology Alliance Change Management Group. He holds his master's degree from CSF. And at this point in time, I will turn over the podium to Chris.
He was serious when he said move forward. I know we're only doing streaming audio broadcasts, but you know, we like to feel a full room. The last time I was in front of lights like this, I was bouncing for a concert when I was in high school. So it's a little blinding. I can only see about halfway back of the room. So I'm going to go ahead and get started here. Thank you for all having us, as well as EDUCAUSE for allowing us to make this presentation. Hopefully it's as beneficial for you as it has been for us going through this process. I'm here on behalf of Amir Dabirian, who is our CIO and VP for IT. He unfortunately couldn't make it this week, and I'm here representing him. So we'll go ahead and get started. Cal State Fullerton was founded in 1957. The salient points on this slide are basically that for most people, we're located really close to Disneyland, which makes it really attractive for some people. We have about 36,000 students by headcount, and we have a number of different degrees, 103 offered at the campus. We're the fourth largest campus in the state of California behind UCLA, USC, and Berkeley. Okay. All right, so we're going to be talking about two emergent and technology trends that have been around over the last couple of years and how we've kind of integrated those two together on our campus. We're looking at both a mobile strategy as well as a cloud computing strategy on our campus tied together. And what we've been noticing over time is the same thing that probably everybody else was, that the stack and EDUCAUSE's top 10 this year, the previous year, have always included mobile and infrastructure and cyber infrastructure. Those have been key points. And as students continue to evolve and continue to show up on campus, the mobile component becomes larger and larger and a driver for many of us, particularly those of us in the classroom. So as we looked at this and move forward, what we're starting to see in the classroom are things like this illustration, you know? Faculty member standing up at the front of the class saying, get ready for your quiz in George Washington, please take out your mobile phones to be able to take the quiz. A lot more faculty, I won't say a lot is a misnomer. We have a few more faculty that are moving this sort of dynamic educational sort of way over a mobile strategy. And what we're going to be looking at today is what we've done to facilitate that from an infrastructure perspective to allow those type of that type of interaction to occur. So on our campus, we have what we call a mobile first strategy. And what that is it's different than a web strategy. A web strategy being something that you develop and you want to put your services on the web. So you post up web pages, you make it, quote, globally available in that particular way. Our mobile strategy is a strategy that's devised and set up for mobile devices in specific. We're writing it around an application set that is made for iPads, iPhones, Android devices, a whole series of infrastructure that the students are arriving on our campus with and faculty are also engaged with. As part of this mobile-first strategy, Cal State Fullerton has rolled out to the campus about 1,100 iPads to all fully qualified staff and faculty and administrators on the campus. We're leveraging this in the classroom as well as in their day-to-day life for things like RTP processes and leveraging it as well with the virtual lab that we'll go ahead and see. Now these devices have their own back end associated with them, as I said before, which has implications for our development schema. It means we have a development team that's wrapped around developing application sets that are geared toward these devices. So what are students doing with the technology? We're seeing exactly what ECAR and EDUCAUSE have put out over the last 2 to 3 years, that more and more students are coming out and wanting more of these types of items delivered to their iPhones, delivered to their devices, and customized in a way that is set up for those mobile devices. Not so much that it's delivered simply for the web and you try and resize it and you spend most of your day making your index finger and your thumb move back and forth if you can get the thing to scale properly for you on your screen. So we're seeing the same thing, that 9 out of 10 students are using many of both the websites as well as application sets. And how do we build an infrastructure wrapped around that, since that is a mode of delivery that we're seeing a greater demand for? On the faculty side, the big question we continue to receive is, so what does this mean for my data? Where's my data? And our answer, of course, now these days is it's up in the clouds. What are the clouds? The cloud's been many different things over a period of time. Historically, we've known the cloud to be, for instance, a mainframe setup. It's been around for a very, very long time. Particularly for me, I'm so young, it's been around since I've been alive. But for many of us out there, it's turned into client-server architecture with external storages, and more recently, into hosted environments where you've got storage capacities that make your internal campus storage both extensible and scalable. So this conversation with faculty turns into something that becomes a greater point of concern when it comes to provisioning and how you actually use the technology. So at Fullerton, in order to address these ongoing concerns that are both from a sociological and from a physical way, how are we handling them? We have something called an integrated technology strategy. And what we're trying to do with this, and accomplishing it quite well, is establish a baseline on the campus that says it doesn't matter who you report to necessarily, but we're eliminating silos as part of this infrastructure. Let's build a common infrastructure across the campus that no matter where you are, you can leverage that infrastructure. So we eliminate the silos, we eliminate the concerns about IT's trying to consolidate everybody inside IT. Our IT division really isn't concerned with that. We're concerned about having good IT services across the entire campus. So this integrated technology strategy is a way of getting at that. And what the strategy looks at are these basically, this spherical diagram here. It has a whole series of foci circled around the core infrastructure. And each one of these areas has a guiding committee that is university represented in order to drive the projects and drive the infrastructure investments that we make moving forward. On both sides, you'll see barbelled accessible technology and information security, because oftentimes those are a tenuous relationship, and also pulling at the resource investments that we make on the campus. And then finally, the three main points that we try and ensure that cut across, no matter what project or what infrastructure level we're dealing with, is sustainability, collaboration, and visionary. We try and address each one of those three points in every single one of the projects that cuts across each one of these areas. So we've got ERP, access, support, and training. And in working with the campus, we try and keep people to a baseline level. And there may be colleges that go out and want to extend it further than we're able to provide. We like those because those are leadership areas that we help push them into or help support them into migrating into. The governance structure, as with everything else on a campus, there's always some level of governance involved. Without it, we've discovered that we ourselves have done many projects where we've gone out and led, and they've been quite successful, but it's taken a long time to get that base level of adoption to occur where you have a majority of the campus actually following along. So in order to help bring those two together where your pilots aren't so bleeding edge to the campus, where the bleeding edge is brought together with the normal adoption curve, we incorporate a technology governance, which basically wraps in a whole series of Senate, as well as academic affairs, Council of Deans, student affairs, and associated students wrapped around the entire governance. All of this on our campus moves up to a president's administrative board, and that body is representative of each one of the vice presidents reporting to the president. All of this is part of our information technology governance on the campus. So there's an infrastructure committee that we saw before that sits at the core of all of this. And this committee more or less takes a look at, from a scalar perspective, where do we want to go? What are the business needs and requirements we have and academic needs that we actually have on the campus for instruction? And how can we get to those particular areas? Who wants to drive it for research? Who wants to drive it for instruction? And what areas do we have in service on the campus that need to be taken to the next level? As part of this, we discuss things, everything from the level of what is a planned outage period of time, which is standard service area, all the way into building out things like you're going to see now, which is a demonstration of a virtual computing lab. So I'll go ahead and hand it over to Ramel, who's going to take it over and talk about the remaining components.
Thank you, Chris, for that great background introduction. So a little bit about our virtual computing strategy for the campus. For our cloud computing strategy, we looked at several different things that we could do with regards to using external, local, and a private cloud VCL strategy. We also looked at other cloud computing deployment tools such as the Amazon Cloud and other virtualization infrastructure strategies that we could use. For our server infrastructure for the campus, we actually moved from physical boxes to VMware hosted appliances. And then for the virtual computing lab environment, what we started to do was we actually started to use the North Carolina State University model that is now part of the Apache VCL incubator project. What we did for our campus was we went over to NCSU, we visited them. We actually visited Henry Schaeferstein, who's over here, and Dr. Mladen Vuk, and talked to them about the technology that they wrote up, what capabilities they were able to do, and also the type of hardware that they were using. So moving from that type of environment, we actually sent one of our technical staff over to North Carolina State University to work with the NCSU team. And you know, they did a knowledge transfer, taught our technical staff how to get the VCL system going. And from there, we were able to set up this environment where you know, we are now serving up, I believe it's about 600 virtual nodes using the Apache VCL software. I'm going to hand it off to Willie to talk a little bit more about the different sections of our VCL infrastructure and what we're using in our campus to enable it for the students, the faculty, and the staff.
Thanks, Romel. So taking from here, when we went to NC State, we look at their hardware, we say, wow, they have all those resources. They have all the support from IBMs and NetApps and to the equipment. And then when we come back to Fullerton, we say, well, what can we do to be able to still able to make this VCO happen? And at the same time, what we're doing is we're also virtualizing our servers. So taking from there, the servers is being virtualized. We still have some hardware that hasn't been expired in warranties, and even if they're expiring warranties, they're pretty much done in the dozen at this point. They're still powerful enough that we can make it into a virtual computing lab infrastructure. So what I did, we have about 4 blade chassis of Dell blades. So I took those blade servers and then made it into a virtual computing lab infrastructure. All we need is to add more memories. At the same time, since we were building our virtual environment, we took the same approach as NC State did, bought a NetApp as our backend. So what we did, we end up is NetApp running on the backend, running the NFS drive, for some of you who are more technical, and then start virtualizing our servers into our virtual infrastructure with our VMware and a little bit more powerful machines. When we left off is these blade servers, add more memories to it. They're dual core, 2-socket CPU boxes, essentially they're 4-core, virtualizing into close to a 12 or 11 or 12 virtual systems on a single core or in a single blade. So that's hence that we're able to make it into almost like 480 systems out of the 4 blade centers. So with this infrastructure taking the same approach as the NC State, there's the VCO database that handles all the database requests. The web handles all the requests from the users. And then there's the VCO managers that manage all those blade nodes. So to wrap things up into something that's more presentable to the faculty and staff and students, we call our cloud the Titan Cloud, since we're Titans. And from there, we have our virtual computing lab, and then did some presentations on how those things worked out. And one of the Titan Cloud is the VCL, which is the virtual computing lab. This is one of the screenshots when user logged in. We start building those images based on the base images that our system administrator built. You can hand off that rest of the add-ons, whether it's applications or some other modules for the particular lab, then you can build your labs. And one of the things that we did with our VCL is we incorporated into our own single sign-on. So campus, we're using our own single sign-on in our portal, and then once that portal is logged in, then we actually use Shibboleth authentications for our VCL logins too. The first login page for VCL, that's how either we can log in via user local account or the SHIB login. Once they log in, they'll be presented with this particular landing page. Then they can make reservations or they can check out their current reservations and whatnot. Faculty, they can set up a block or reservation. So for example, at the beginning of the class, they can say, okay, I want to set up 20 instances, and system can reserve 20 instances for a particular class of student login. They don't have to wait, because every time when you start up a VCO instance, you have to wait for its provisioning, setting up the securities so the user can log in. So for example, there's our library lab that student can reserve on SPSS. And once user make a reservation, they get this status page. It's pretty much the same codes that were imported from an Apache consortium. We haven't really made much of the changes as far as the landing page and whatnot, because they're very efficient. There's no need to make changes for. So after a certain time frame, you get your connect buttons. You get your remote computing IP address, and use your RDP client, and you can log in. Of course, that username and password is no longer valid because it's already timed out. You can definitely try it out, but I don't think it will work. With that connect button, actually, the get RDP files, if you're running on Windows, of course, you get your RDP client screen pop out, and you actually have your credentials already. So when you log in, you log into a right IP address with the right user ID. Password, user still has to type in because we don't want that password to be incorporated into that little add-on. And then you get your reservation. From now on, this is something that we totally did it in a new thing, so this is really fresh out of the oven. Just probably last few weeks, one of our staff, technical staff, took another approach. It took him a while because this is totally new, that we start building the VCO for Macintosh, and this is the first. When we visited NC State last year, we look at all the environment and we see, okay, well, NC State, the Unix is already being built, Linux is already being built, Windows is already being built. I'm pretty sure most of your colleges will have some labs on Macintosh. And we're thinking, well, what can we do with Macintosh? So we start building the Mac site, one of the staff, Jim Sodell, he really did put a lot of time in finding out what's the ins and outs of the system, and then he built the connectors for Macintosh. So now we're able to run the Macintosh in a VCO environment. So I'll do a real quick demo on the Macintosh remote connection. So same thing as logging into the VCO environment. I already made my current reservations for Mac, but I can still make another one. For example, I'll just do my reservations. Here's my basic Mac OS X. I mean, it's very still in the infant stage, but so usually what campus do as a core admin do is we'll build a base image, and then we'll give the base image to the college tech or the campus tech, and then they'll build the additional images or additional softwares to gear for their classes, whether it's accounting class or whether it is a geography class, depends on the applications that they're running. And then they can then give that instance to the faculties, and then faculty can run from it. So here we have the basic OS X. I can create reservations for a later time frame, or I can create it now and then for particular durations, 4, 6, 8 hours, or even longer. And as you can see, I have one that was already timed out. There's one that is it's connected, and then that's kind of pending.
And so this is running in Fullerton right now?
Yeah, the question is this is running in Fullerton right now? It is. It is running in Fullerton.
We do have a limited number of machines. Uli, you want some of the screenshot of the actual hardware that we're using?
Yeah.
We reprovision Mac Pro workstations in order to get this going because the operating system just needed Mac hardware in order for it to run. Mm-hmm. You can show them the setup that we've got in the data center.
Mm-hmm. So let me finish this demo real quick, and then I'll do a present. We'll go back to the slides. So here's already my login page for my Mac. I can do another login. Here's my another login. Once it's provisioned, I'll do my connect. One of the things that we did it with the Macintosh in this particular case is we purchased this license called IRAP from CodeRebel. One of the things why we end up doing that way is because we don't want to create it, a Mac VNC type connections to the Mac VCO. We want to have a seamless connections so user can use a single type remote desktop client whether it's from a PC or from a Mac. And Macintosh does have a remote desktop connections also. So from there on, I'll type in my password.
There's still some things that we need to work out. It's still at an experimental stage right now.
Like one of the things that we need to correct for the operating system is maybe change the background image, because it looks like whenever a user logs in, it takes a while to load just because of that background image for that the Mac OS X is using.
Yeah, it's the refresh, the background refresh. That takes a while. So usually when you're in a VCO environment, especially if you're in we're in remote locations. Every bit of a background that you can reduce into a plain environment that will speed up your process. So to kind of display what it is, yes.
Is the virtual environment set up as high availability?
Virtual environment, the question is virtual environment set up as high availability? The setup for virtual environment is, since we're reusing all these hardwares, all this hardware are individual hardwares, and they're just kind of bringing into a single pool. The VCO management will know, hey, is this node up or it's not, from a host standpoint, because each host can host many of guest OSs. Depends on what kind of images that you're loading up. And then you'll say, oh yeah, this node is down, so I'm gonna take this node offline and I can reprovision my nodes from someplace else. So I'm a system guy, so every time when I log into a system, especially if it's a new system, I'll look at the system utilizations and monitorings. So as you can see, it's not, from a remote logging standpoint, it's not that bad as far as refresh goes. So here's the system. Let me go back to the finders and I'll show you the Mac site. Go back to the Mac. Here's my Apple. So as you can see, this particular Mac, it's a virtualized Mac. You still see that it's running 2.6 gig and it's running a 7.8 gig memory. There's no Mac that's running on 7.8 gig memory in a physical Macintosh. So that's a little demonstration of the Mac. And from the iRap software itself, it can also pass music or the audios to your PC. So that's one of the other reasons that we go with the iRap for the Code Rebel company. Yes?
The question was how many concurrent sessions we have for the Mac Pro.
Yeah. So for this particular instance, we're running a very first generation of Mac Pro. It's a dual core, two socket, so it's a 2.666 gig CPUs. We want to make this as user experience, a good user experience as possible. So we only made it three instances out of this Mac Pro. No, it's not. One of the other reasons, one is to increase user experience. And besides, particular Macintosh, especially for certain applications, we want to be able to build an application that is usable rather than running a 2 gig memory, and then, because a lot of Mac applications requires more than the memory that's required.
Yeah, for the setup that we've got, we actually purchased Mac OS X server licenses for each instance that we've created. Mm-hmm. So we're using the licensing scheme that Apple has made available to us in the educational environment.
Yeah. I'm sorry, can you repeat that question again?
So if I can rephrase your question, Apple is a little wary of using their hardware and virtualization schemes. We're actually working with Apple on this. They're aware of everything we're doing and what where we're trying to go with the model. Mm-hmm. So they're kind of partnering with us as this conversation because mm-hmm. most of the campuses that we've spoken to, their pockets on the campus, like almost all of our art schools, are heavily Mac-driven. And they can't participate in the program on a Windows side. They have a few applications they can use, but until you really go Mac, they can't go virtual. So, and Apple's very understanding of that. So we're working with them on how would the licensing look with this, how would the hardware configurations work and moving forward. But as of yet, what you're saying is historically true, yes, but they're working with us as part of this project. Yeah. They are talking with us. What Fullerton has done for this particular project is we've purchased enough licenses to represent the virtualized instances. So we're covering ourselves that way as part of the project, but Apple is working with us as part of the project. Yeah.
So part of the Apple's license is you Snow Leopard, you can only run virtualized systems on a server on a server OS, and you can only run it on a Mac hardware. I know that the Lion come out. The Lion, you can run workstation OS in a virtualized environment. We are exploring that avenue, but since Lion just came out, so we haven't had a chance to explore that.
Yeah, it would require some code changes on our part, and we haven't had time for that at this point in time.
I have another question from an online participant. I'm not sure if you've addressed it or not. It's what RDP software are you using to connect to the Mac servers?
We are using CodeRebel IRAP, mm-hmm. IRAP RDP server.
So
go back to the PowerPoint?
Yep. So
okay, so
go back to... Okay. So going back to the hardware, these are all reused Mac Pros. I think they're probably about 3 or 4 years old. And we're running on the Mac OS X server, the Snow Leopard. As you can see, that's reiterated on the PowerPoint, it is a CodeRebel IRAP RDP server. So we can use the same RDP client for both Windows and Macintosh users. And it is still running, developing on Apache VCL 2.1. And there are some custom VCL codes which we're going to donate it back to the VCL consortium. So here is our very little Mac Lab VCLs. As you can see, we kind of just stacked them up into a rack. Since we don't have a lot of Mac Xserve, this will just feed our needs for experimental use. So as you can see, probably about 15 of them, we can build an experimental Mac lab. These are just a couple more OS X screenshots.
Oh, here we go. So in our tribute to Steve Jobs, we just wanted to say one more thing. The code that we use for the Mac OS 10 provisioning piece for the Apache VCL incubator project, you want to go to the next slide? We are working on contributing it to the VCL incubator project. We just need to have our campus contracts and procurement department complete the contributor license agreement, and once that's set, it's actually going to be made available within the Apache VCL incubator project for the rest of you to download for your use and experimentation. And with that, that's what we've got. We can take questions now.
Can you walk up to the mic? Thank you.
You talked a little bit about the Apple licensing. How about licensing for other software projects in this heavily virtualized environment? What challenges have you faced with that?
you astutely noticed there was no slides about software licensing. So what we've been doing is on an individualized basis talking with each company as they move forward, because as all of you know, you're having the same conversations I am. They don't have the same perspectives about virtualization even across software as an industry. So in some cases, we've been able to say the way that we're using it, because of the way the nodal base works on our virtual lab, it is kept to a campus license on a campus server, running on a campus server box. Some of them say you're already covered. Others of them say, well, this is a virtualized instance and we want to continue to remain that an instance is a separate version of that software. So there still really is no consistent story with licensing, but we're working our way through the process and trying to get people to come to some kind of common definition with that. We're hoping that our implementation that we've gotten from North Carolina is something that we're able to help further drive the conversation forward because of the way that we've got it provisioned. But very good question. Yes.
I'd just like to add to this discussion on licensing. There's a EDUCAUSE constituent group on software licensing, and Steve and I were there this morning, and there was a big discussion on licensing in a cloud environment and trying to get higher ed to work together to speak with a reasonably coordinated voice about the problems and the benefits for us and for the vendors of being reasonable and having cloud licensing. So I hope everyone will take a look at that constituent group. Join if you'd like it. There's a active listserv.
And I can speak for Amir on saying this, that he is more than happy to participate in this, and we at Fullerton are very happy to participate in that. We view that as something that's key and necessary as we move forward with all the projects we're working on.
And then the another thing is you have very nice slides. I hope they are posted, or you will post them at the resource section.
They will be
available.
Will.
Yes. Yeah. That would be great.
I just want to add thank you to Henry Schaefer, who's now speaking. He was actually very instrumental in our campus implementing this project. North Carolina State University hosted myself and a couple of members in our team and actually showed us the ropes, taught us what we needed to know about the virtual computing lab. And without his team and Dr. Mladen Vuk, we wouldn't be where we're at with the virtual computing lab environment we've got for our campus.
Thank you, Romel. And then let me just ask a provocative question. I noticed, Chris, that you showed your ERP group also in there. I think that this type of virtualization, the VCL, has promise to be used in the ERP environment as well as in the academic environment. Mm-hmm. We haven't gotten very far, but not for technical reasons, for cultural reasons. How far have you gotten?
The way that the ERP environment is set up within the CSU system is that it's centralized all the way up at the CSU system. So we don't have much control over the individualized boxes or presentation of that, other than working on, say, test boxes or pre-releases. So most of that is central. Those conversations have begun, though. So on our campus, the dialogues where we're capable of having it, we are making very good headway, and there's a lot of interest. So, but as far as the total ERP, it's kind of out of our hands at this point.
Yeah. I've got a question for you a little bit off center here. You showed a lot of slides about server backend and all that stuff. How are you doing virtualizing the desktops, your environment there? You've talked about mobile computing. Mm-hmm. You're delivering images to those mobile computing devices. What about your labs and all that other stuff?
Okay, what we're doing, we are delivering images to our labs. We have our general open labs that IT runs have run over semesters on top of this, both as a selection choice for the images themselves or as pushed images that when you log into the machine, you're literally logging in directly to the virtual lab. Students notice no difference. Our next step is starting to look at the desktop boxes that people use day to day. One of the concerns that we have in moving forward with that is we like some maturity in the way that some of the images are built, because what we can see is building pockets of specialization across the campus where once you get the images dialed in, your finance area doesn't necessarily work the same as your anthropology department. And the images that may occur in those particular places may be varied from one to another. And that goes back a little bit to the licensing conversation because of what may be available in those areas. But it is something we are very interested in moving forward towards, but we don't think it's going to be something we'll be in the next 6 months. It's something that's a little further down the path for us.
I noticed that, you know, when you guys were talking, obviously you're talking about using RDP. You know, knowing the Mac community, especially their expectations as far as performance is concerned, surrounding interactivity with the applications, meaning, you know, editing movies in Final Cut remotely or something, you know, the ultimate goal, because you mentioned several times that you wanted to keep the performance high. You know, we have a virtualized environment where we've also toyed around with some RDP deployment. And what we have found is it does not really have the performance needs, at least not today, that are required to really do a highly interactive application like you would have and expect to use on a Mac. I mean, obviously we were far away from your center, you know, there's a lot of delay. Is the performance a lot better on campus, or are you guys looking at other technologies, you know, different ideas, you know, different desktop things, or pushing VMware, PC over IP, or Citrix even, ICA or something on the Mac?
Mm-hmm. Well, we did some experiment with several different open source and the software. And so far, I mean, we're still, I want to say we're still premature as far as finding out what is really optimized. In this case, one of the approach that we're trying to accomplish in here is to make a single remote desktop client for both Mac and PC. But definitely, I mean, we'll encourage a lot of inputs from the communities to find out what makes, what works and what can we optimize. But thank you very much for the input.
Yeah, I think that's one of the first questions that we got when people heard that we were experimenting with Mac OS X in a VCL environment. They said, were you able to get Final Cut to work? We were no. It's just too resource intensive.
Yeah. And one of the applications we're actually trying to push on this, we have our, I'm from the Department of Geography, so I have connections there. We're attempting to run GIS over this. If we can run GIS over this, everything else is going to be okay. So that's kind of what we're using as our benchmark. So once we are able to get that up and running, you'll see another presentation from us coming back saying, GIS works. I'm not sure any other application is going to have a problem. So that's kind of where we're aiming for. But we definitely understand what you're saying because we experience it every day.
Yeah. In your cloud project, are you planning to provide core on demand for scientific proposals?
For
HPC, for example.
Oh, the question is, are we going to provide HPC type?
Like Amazon does, for example. If one wants a certain amount of cores on demand, are you planning to provide this?
Yeah, so I'll go ahead and take that. There was some of the presentations that we had done previously, we talked about how we're looking at extending this once it goes beyond what we consider our high range pilot. And that is, we're looking at how do we extend this out from there? Do we go to an Amazon-type cloud? Is it an IBM-type cloud? And building in these image sets so that the image creation is agnostic to the vendor. Because one of the issues that we encounter, and those of you who have been doing the virtual longer than we have, you know that when you build a specific kind of image, typically you're locking yourself into a vendor type. We're looking to try and go a little bit towards the agnostic type of image build. So something like play in Amazon sphere, play in IBM sphere, and play in any other sphere in order to get at precisely that, yes.
One of the things I want to circle back on the license is on the VCL, you can actually determine how many instances you want to run on particular sessions of that particular image. So if, for example, if you have a 40 license from a particular software company, you can specify that instance to that session to that particular image to only run 40 instances. Yes.
Some application licenses won't allow, explicitly allow virtualization.
I know many of the vendors are changing their perspective on that. Initially, we were told SPSS said that, and as you can tell by the drop down, we
have SPSS running. So it is both technically capable and possible from a licensing perspective. So I think what's happening, and we're experiencing this at a much more rapid rate than we've seen in other places, is some of the software companies are in some ways waiting for some of us to actually try this and show that, well, it actually does technically work, so how can I actually get this done? And that's kind of what we're hoping to push with some of this. NC State is way ahead of us in this game because they've been having those conversations for a couple of years, and I can see why he's pulling for the rest of your help to come in and have the conversation with him, and we're definitely joining the boat. But that is a maturing conversation with vendors as they see that their software actually does work. Apple kind of had the same sort of conversation point when you would talk to them too, like, well, it's not really written for that, and we're not really sure how to license it, and then we're able to technically prove that it could work, and now they're saying, well, let's work with you on this and see how we can make it happen. So, yeah, hope that answers your question. My timer's flagging me here in the front a little bit.
Yeah, so I think we've got 5 minutes left.
5 minutes. Any other questions?
Can you talk a little bit about the management tools that you use for virtualization, if you've had exposure to Xen or VMware, and why you ended up where you're at?
The back end of the host, it is a VMware ESXi. The management tools, it is from the Apache Incubator Consortium that we download. So the management tools, as you can see from, do I actually have a, no, I don't. Okay, from the very bottom piece. The bottom center piece, the VCO actually is broken down into three parts, the VCO management, the VCO database, and the VCO web. The management is the one that manage all the VM hosts, and also the guests. There's quite a few network infrastructure that needs to be set up, so there are some backends that you have to manage from the private IP, private management VLAN, so you can spawn out our systems, initiate a session, log in from the backend, either through CGI Wing or through the SSH connections to Unix or Linux boxes to create a user account. So the user just logging from the VCO website, so they can, based on whatever credentials that you're trying to let user connect to, then you can create a session or generate a new session. Databases is just images and also the sessions that user log into. Does that answer your question?
Okay. Well, great. If there's no other questions, thank you very much for having us, and we're more than happy to come back and give you further updates on what's happening if you want us to send an email or happily participate with us.
And we will be providing the PowerPoint for our presentation in the EDUCAUSE website for our presentation today. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.